Welcome to Cast Errors. My name is Christian Corley, and we go straight into our second part of the Robots of Death discussion and commentary between myself and James McLean. Enjoy. You mentioned it being an interesting cliffhanger. It's quite a big cliffhanger for a second episode, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very true. I forget this is the second episode cliffhanger, so you're halfway through. It does feel very sort of, slightly further into that second act. Maybe you're the bridge to the third act, isn't it? This sort of... It's a shame, again, that the script does so much to try and hide who Taron Capel is. And like as I say, the actual production does it very badly. It's a weird design, that Sandminer. Again, as that wasn't what I imagined, but... I'm surprised no fan has actually tried to break down its scale. In contents. I wonder, just looking at it now, whether it's a little too small, the exterior. Because obviously we've got the grate at the front, which we see Baker, the Doctor and Leela in, so you can work out a scale of person to that, and then extrapolate that to the rest of the model.
It does.
This area is very Star Trek, isn't it, in terms of scale and size? So
and
if
again,
you extrapolate it from what you're saying that to the scale of the exterior that we see, then yeah,
You do get an exterior of this area in the first episode. You see through the front of this, so you could work it out.
Yeah,
it's not a massive space, but then I suppose you've still got to say there's probably at least 8 floors there, 8-9 floors, and a big engine space as well. So. I don't think we can say it's because I don't think the grate matches the size of the bridge at the top there, but you know, these are things which will now upset me for a long time. Go neurodivergence. Again, I just love, I know we've said this before, I just love the ornateness of their, there's the decadence of their design. And I love the idea that even, and it kind of makes sense that if you're no longer having to do the dirty work on a sandminer, it could be a place which would have the same decadence because your people are probably, by the sounds of this, getting very rich.
Yeah.
So you probably come from quite good backgrounds. You're going to, you could look like this. You wouldn't be getting dirty. The robots get dirty. And if you are people who essentially have certain skills, so you are skilled people, you're not manual people, you are probably well-paid people because you're almost, it feels like they're almost analysts.
They're on the
sand mine, they're analysing, predicting, and finding streams within the storms. That they're sort of highly qualified people who probably come from very good, as with everyone in Doctor Who at this point, middle-class backgrounds, unless accented otherwise, that they would be kind of well off and be proud of that. I mean, it could be a society where everyone looks like this. I can't remember from the novels. I did read Corpse Marker. But yeah, I mean, it's just like they put so much eyeliner on Leela. And again, you could say, well, maybe that's her... her clan or her 17 markings is
eyeliner.
Heavy eyeliner and a bit of eyeshadow mixed in from mud and blood. But it would have been fascinating if they got someone who was like with massive face paint and sort of matted hair and really, really quite muscled.
Well, they didn't really even have to matter hair. They could have just, you know, they could have just tied it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the issue for me, is that if you're a warrior, and again, I suppose it depends on the type of codes as a warrior you have. Would you brush your hair and have it long? Would you tie it back so it was not in your face or something that's going to get in the way? But then I suppose again, it's an alien, so you don't know. Maybe that's a sign of power, that you know that you look your best, but you look your best and you are the best at being vicious at the same time. There's such good plays here with Pool here and playing this notion of the suspicion of him locking her in. I like the sound design on this as well. I like the beeps.
Yeah.
They're quite soothing, which they would be, I think, because again, this is a very soothing place for people. It's obviously meant to look nice and be a livable space while you spend months out here. I mean, I always wondered, again, I can't remember from the books whether all the android or the robots would look like this, or whether, again, this would be the servants of the rich people or the well-off people or the well-off companies that would look decadent and styled. What are you doing? Would normal people just get something more like Anthony Daniels?
My job.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, the downsides to the story, which had to be done and is very brave, is the loss. Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of gross as well for.
Yeah.
I remember at the time, because it's almost like flesh on it. As if it's gone right into the neck. But losing Poole, I was going to say, I think he's such a strong character in this. And pretty much from this point, he's halfway through the story, he's no longer an active agent.
Yeah.
See this here?
Yeah.
I mean, you can see exactly who it is.
Yes.
You can see the gender, you can see the distinctive eyes, you know who, by beginning of part three, you know who the person is. And it's just purely down to a choice which didn't have to be made. They could have kept that screen as black. I mean, I think it's funny how you have that inverted look, and then it's sort of, because it's pulsing. When it pulses into his face, and you can see his face. I mean, there is an argument that could be made that perhaps she doesn't matter by this point, but I think it probably does.
Yeah, I think it probably
does. Because you still wonder, it's still pushing that it could be Ivanov at this point.
Yeah.
But now you know it's definitely not. And if you thought there was going to be a big swing and it's going to be Toos, no. Forget how quickly some of the main characters die. I mean, Zilda was quite a big one. I always like that as well, the Baker reveal and the slight flourish, musical flourish as the curtain opens. I mean, I always did like, one of the things I did like about Moffat when he did the time crash thing with Davison and Tennant, where he's one of the first people to really sort of prod that notion of how pretentious the Doctor is. Well, I suppose Aronovitch does it in Remembrance of the Daleks as well. This notion, like, you think he's sitting there cross-legged behind that curtain waiting, because he knows, obviously, when he does that reveal, he's going to look cross-legged and waiting and pixie-ish. And the Doctor plans this, because that whole notion, he says in Time Crash, that, you know, Peter Davison's Doctor wore glasses because he thought it looked cool. Mm. No, it wasn't a necessary thing. He's a pretentious person. Priority red. And there's that line in Remember the Daleks, yes, where I think the Doctor says the Time Lords have an infinite, I can't remember what the line is. Basically, an infinite desire for pretension, or an infinite potential for pretension, pretentiousness, or something. And Ace nods, because yes, McCoy is someone who is, again, a very performative Doctor.
The the hood that our villain is wearing is a bit silly as well, isn't it? It's just there to stop us seeing who it is. It's never seen again, that but outfit.
We've already seen who it is, so it's so pointless. I do like, in that last shot where we have the removal of the face, how the interior is actually quite unusual, the robots.
Yeah.
It's, normally it would just be, as it has been in like a couple of years beforehand with the Android Invasion, awkward circuit boards and gears. But this feels something far more synthetic and sophisticated. This is a lovely scene. But I know 1,000 fans have said this a million times before, but I would agree there, allied voices, that I'd have been very happy to see D-84 step into the TARDIS and become a companion. He'd have been brilliant. You know, it wouldn't be like Chameleon where you've got the issue of, you know, mechanics or anything. Dude in a suit, playing a robot. He's just such a nice, soft character. Amazed me that they never did anything like this, really. That's dim. Even for a dumb, that's dim. Either Holmes or Boucher loved that line. Again, Baker's reactions to this are really good. Especially when he's got nothing to play against. I'd overlooked the possibility of substitution. I have failed.
I have failed.
Yes. I think the line was infinite capacity for pretentiousness. But I could be wrong.
Congratulations, failure is one of the basic freedoms.
Yes. I think the other thing with the design, which always fascinated me with the robots and why they came to it, and it works so well, is the hair.
Yeah, I like the hair.
It's incredible. And I think, again, unlocking memories. I think as a kid, I'd only seen those like front shot images of the robots. So I think I was quite surprised when I saw one, and, you know, quite the detail of the back of the head. It's such a decadent bed, isn't it? It's like a clam.
I know, this is well in the previous scene, not to take away the drama from this, but the level of the design of this world goes into even the paperwork, which isn't paperwork, it's like overhead projector sheets or something. It's all transparent about what the Doctor was reading through and what Zelda was reading as well.
It is, yeah. It's just on every level.
Yeah.
There's so much thought. It gives you a sense that, and again, I don't think I've ever listened to the commentary for this. Well, the other commentary.
There's another commentary?
It feels, I guess so. But it just feels like a production where everyone's on board and everyone's on the same page. Probably not, but everything works together. And such sensible choices. Of course, as soon as you do something decadent rather than alien, you know, your prop opportunities widen massively.
Yes.
Like you've got in the background these statues in her room. You can do these extravagant BBC costumes and they just don't look out of place.
Do as I say. Yes, Commander. Can anyone hear me?
And this really smart idea, which again, I don't know whether Boucher was thinking about how they would do it or whether it was just part of the story, but this sort of Art Deco look of these robots allows you to play on an aesthetic where they don't have to look real.
Yes.
And strangely enough, with the capacities and budgets of the BBC, that falls perfectly into their remit. I heard a cry. He'd have been so good as a companion. Imagine him in Victoria, London.
I heard a cry. That was me.
He could have had two My Fair Ladies trying to make... You know what I mean? we've been trying to make D84 into a man, while he's obviously trying to make Leela into a civilized person. Could have been a forerunner to Data. What a missed opportunity. Six, you will go now and kill Acting Commander Toose. And to confirm, it was V3 on the cover, you said?
Yes.
V3.
Yes,
V3. Okay, just checking. I'm just a little annoyed at past me for not noticing V3 was actually on the minor.
Easily done.
Or maybe I did and then I forgot. I don't know. It's a long time ago.
The design on this is Kenneth Sharp, who also did Claws of Axos and Macra Terra.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Claws of Axos, I didn't think was very good. I mean, obviously, there is a similarity in the design aesthetic.
There's a little one, a slight one, isn't there? Yeah.
But the consistency here is far more than Claws of Axos. But then, to be fair, I think Claws of Axos was a very difficult one to make consistent.
Probably, yeah. And costumes was Elizabeth Waller.
But then Macra Terra, in some ways, well, again, while it doesn't have this sort of decadence, it, funnily enough, it's another one with a society, a colony almost, which is quite real in their own way. I always like the sound of Leela's dagger. Does a doing, which I never really imagined.
This could almost be inside the TARDIS in Invasion of Time.
Yeah. It looked better than the TARDIS looked in Invasion of Time, didn't it?
Lasers and probe, that's it.
Yeah, lasers and probe. Are we only on episode 3?
We are.
I feel like we've revealed virtually everything by mid-episode 3. It's moved along at a cracking pace. Really hate the fact I use the term cracking. I don't know why. It sounds like something someone at 60 would use. Oh, it moves along at a cracking pace. Actually, no, it sounds like something you would use.
Yeah, it does.
That is one big syringe thing. But again, a cool design. And the rack's a cool design as well, this sort of cylinder which houses these lasers and probes.
Yeah, and the actual probe motor thing.
Yeah.
And it's like a very elaborate dentist's.
And even around the door there where they've got those rivets, which is a nice touch because, again, it gives a bit of texture to the backdrop, but also it gives a sense of that being a more industrial space just by having those rivets running in those lines. It's just all you need. I mean, it's the beauty of watching BBC dramas because you're always, especially sci-fi ones, where you're playing with the base minimum because you just don't have the money. It's like, where can you infer what you need to infer, what you can't afford to build, but you can perhaps suggest. And if you get that right, you don't need to build it. It will work. And this story is filled with that.
Yes.
That's an odd device. I wouldn't put that too close to your mouth. I forget this is one exact time where she takes her uniform off as such. Yeah, this is something that didn't work very well, does it? It's a good try. I mean, this sex scene is fine, but the handless arm never quite works. Here we go, where you can see where the added line is. To
now, that wrist that the robots have, I know I've mentioned this in the past, but probably a long time ago. When I was a kid, we had we rented our television, as everyone did in those days, and we had I was a bit naughty because what I used to do is go around the back of the TV and drop 2 pence pieces through the slots. That's what the cooling slots an old TV would have. So, and this is possibly I was doing it intentionally in order to make the man from Radio Rentals come round. Our Radio Rentals engineer only had one hand. his other hand, he had a kind of like a neck, like the wrist on that robot just there, to which he had a couple of little attachments, right? So he could have like a pair of pliers that he could manipulate using his muscles. And I was absolutely transfixed by this guy. I thought it was amazing that this guy was able to do his job and, you know, attach tools to his wrist. And every time I see that scene, I see that little sort of like wrist cover thing, I always think of that guy.
I didn't know those sort of things existed.
Yeah, you wouldn't. If I hadn't seen them, I wouldn't have done either. But my mum seems to think that I used to put the coins in the back of the TV so she would ring Radio Rentals and they'd send this guy around.
So did it cause damage doing that? Did it sort of overheat? What was the effect of...
There was lots of twopence pieces in the back of the telly.
You never trust children.
This is why we had our telly on the wall when Daisy was little.
I didn't think you need to do that. I don't think children tend to do that. That is unique to you, Christian. I think probability would have been...
No. Daisy was likely to push it over.
That's different. That seems more childlike. Yeah.
You know what telly's like these days?
Not robots walking dead. Well, someone came up with that phrase 20, 30 years earlier than the big franchise. They're like the walking dead. Well, I suppose, to be fair, it's not a unique phrase, but... Yeah, it's just a shame that, you know, Poole does nothing after this except scream and lie around, and you never even get a sense of what happens to Poole.
Yeah, well, it's strange. He's a kind of a key that unlocks something, isn't it? Isn't he? He moves from... It's quite strange, actually. I can't really think of many occasions where this happens. He moves from being quite a compelling character into essentially a device.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it gives him the opportunity to be... to redeem himself, I suppose, because we all think he's just been caught murdering Zilda.
But what I like about Poole, are we talking about Poole, rather, or are we talking about Ivanov?
I was talking about Ivanov just then.
Yes.
Initially, I was talking about Poole.
Yeah, I was just thinking with Poole, what's quite nice is that his arc would be something, would normally be gendered to a woman. Mm. Sort of thing, you'd have a female arc that where she would break down and then by the end of it be a broken character who could, you know, couldn't operate. It's unusual to see a male character go through that. Ivanov makes a great side character in this. And you say that turn is really nice. It's just such a good cast. And it's a shame that we lose so much of the cast within the first two episodes. It's one of those weird ones where, you know, maybe, just maybe, it could have gone for five episodes.
Ooh. Says absolutely no one ever about four-part Doctor Who's.
I know, but you think there's so much that you're doing with those characters in just the first episode and a bit, and they all die off so quickly. You feel like, would there have been more space to have played in that area before moving to midway through episode two? I'll see if I can just move on to the next episode. So I've started the next episode.
Okay.
2-3 seconds. Four.
Yeah, I'm about there.
Five. Yeah.
About half a second behind. So the final episode of The Robots of Death. Maybe you're the same here. I'm in my head. Almost all of the big scenes of this have already happened.
Yes. I'm hard to remember kind of how we get 20 minutes out of this. But I, in the same way, I kind of do. There's a lot on the control deck, and there's obviously a lot in...
Yeah, there's the whole march of the disco droids bit as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and we've not had the robot with the laser and probe wedged in its head.
No.
Which became a thing. So which V is this? Which VOC is it? Oh, it's SV7, is it? Oh, no, it's not yet. No, it either followed you or it's homed in on this. Kill the Doctor. So again, this almost felt like a cliffhanger. So as a kid, I wondered if this is where it shifted. Because that moment to this moment feels like, oh no, it is the cliffhanger.
This is the cliffhanger, yes. What are you talking about? I'm intrigued by the wound on Ivanov's head. It implies that Paul really punched him.
Yes.
Really punched him.
But then, as I said, you know, like the gore on the robot, which I think is the one who killed Dask, because Dask is the one who would have put up a fight. Is it Dask?
Not Dask.
Brian Crouch's character.
Yeah.
I mean, that looks like if you saw that, that would have been incredibly violent and messy. It's almost like when they, if they do manage to break necks, they just keep going sometimes until this the is neck good, is just, it? Yeah. Look at the eyes. He's already got the blue slits on, so they can do the red effect. That's a famous shot.
And it's it's such a clever kind of mechanism of I love this bit.
Yeah.
But this whole idea of like just red eyes, and it's something that obviously they do with the Ute, which it's interesting that they never went back to it before that.
Yeah, this is an interesting shot. Is it? Which one is this? It's one coming up.
And in many ways, just going back to that, it's interesting that they never went back to this world, really.
With these
amazing designed robots.
Yeah. You've got them all done. I mean, I suppose anything after this would have felt derivative, but at the same time, that's Doctor Who, isn't it?
Well.
Very few returns which aren't decreasing or diminutive returns. If I've got the line right.
Diminishing returns.
Diminishing, thank you.
Yes.
My brain's just not working today. Taron Capel, that's a weird name. I wonder where the origins of that came from.
There's a Czech scientist called Capel, or writer called Capel.
Hmm. Please do not throw hands at me.
Yes. Doctor sent you to her assistance.
Well, where is he then? Where's the robot? It received a priority call. Such a good character. I heard
the instruction on my command circuit. Right, yeah. So it's Carol Capek who wrote the play Raw, science fiction author.
Ah, so that's what he's riffing from then.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I was right, he was Czech. 1890 to 1938. And he first coined the word robot.
Ah, so that's why the Taron Capel.
Yeah.
So the thing with people like Boutros is there'll always be a precedent that they'll be working from. There'll be something that's... Precedent's probably getting the wrong word. I'm just not with it today.
Well, that's sort of an inspiration or something drawn
that's what I mean. From, I mean, it's funny, isn't it, in this where they have, where they do the Grimwade drop as well, Peter Grimwade drop with the Grimwade theory of robotics. There's little in nods.
I like they're having little staff meetings now.
She's very monsters, isn't it? Because they don't need to. They'd just be able to do it network together.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Internally. I mean, are they still giving out corpse markers? They're not at this point, no. So there's no reason
they've given
for
up
it
with
all.
That now, yeah.
I mean, if they had been, then they could say, well, that's the reason for the meeting. I like the way he just leaves it there as well. And your favourite shot again. It's so weird as a child. I think in some ways it's always made worse when you have the TARDIS nearby, which obviously the TARDIS is the point and space of safety, and yet they don't go in it. And as a child, I think that somehow makes it worse. They're not just in a space which is dangerous. They're next to a space which is safe, but they don't go to it. So they stay in the place which is dangerous. And you're thinking, why don't you go into the safe space? And obviously she hasn't got a key or whatever, but you know, it doesn't matter. As a kid, you're just thinking, that's where you want to be, that's where you'll be safe. Some of the rock blast robots are running berserk, out of control and dangerous, do you understand? I understand. Countermeasures are being taken. but it's almost like deliberately forgotten. Which again is something fascinating about lore, isn't it? Is when you get this lore now, which is sort of suggesting Waters of Mars, that there's almost a sense that the Doctor knows there's a certain amount he can and cannot use that time machine before it becomes a problem, before it sort of breaks laws. And that sort of explains why there's so many things in this where he could just go, well, once he knows the police box is safe, he could just go back there, either get stuff, he could just get everyone in there.
I think there was a line in the old Virgin Books writers' guidelines about how when the TARDIS materialises, time crystallises or events crystallise or whatever, so they can't go back to the TARDIS. I mean, it's very loose because obviously there's multiple occasions where the TARDIS is reused throughout the story to move to different planets or whatever. But I think that was... I think that was a thing. I seem to remember reading it somewhere, and that's the only place I would have read it, I think.
But, I mean, it's the sort of thing where, you know, he could have just collected everyone on board the TARDIS. I suppose he can't control it well enough, take them back to the city and let the city sort them out.
Mm.
You know, you might have a mad scientist among them, but you wouldn't have any of the robots. But you don't want to do that because that's a story mess up. And I think it also adds this one, this idea of, like, is the Doctor a playful child? Is he someone who, there are easier ways to sort these things out, but it's like playing a video game. If you have cheat mode on, it's boring.
Yes.
So you deliberately avoid the cheat mode. And you do feel like, is this, again, the notion of, you know, the Arenovich and Cartmel and Davis notion of the, you know, the god playing among chickens? He could sort this easily. She's almost what the Waters of Mars is about. It's like a point where in that way he just goes, I can solve this, and I'm going to solve it the way that I could solve it easily. And that's just bring the police box to the TARDIS to me and get everyone out alive, because I can do that. And breaks that cardinal rule, activates the cheat mode. I love how his doctor responds to Leela as well. There's just ran outside the mine. I tried to save him. That yes you did. Acknowledgement of her win, but it's not that important to that moment. It's not a reward, it's just an acknowledgement. I mean, I think it'd have been nice to have known what happened to Poole after this, because can he recover from this, or is he now like this? Or, you know, is it just like a PTSD thing? We know you are all on the control deck. You have 5 minutes to surrender. Probably is a mental thing until one gets his hands around your neck. If we give ourselves up, we'll be destroyed anyway. Is that what you're saying, Seven? I don't like that shot. I think that sort of gives away the settiness of it all. I understand why it's there, just I don't think it frames very well either.
You don't often get overhead shots in classic Doctor Who.
No, you don't. That is very true. If you could pass a positive charge to the metal plate. Look at that poor guy in the background trying to balance. Provided, of course, you can get closer. I mean, he must have been like really walking down the steps. You want me on one leg? The problem is also, in terms of the scene, it is distracting because your brain automatically looks at the unusual, and the usual is a guy very still in the background. So you're now looking to see whether they're moving. You're not listening. There's some lovely bits in this last episode as well. Again, the pace throughout this has been perfect, the way it starts slow and it ramps up. I mean, the only problem, I think, is that my only criticism, I don't know how you do it, I don't feel that threatened by the robots at any point in this. I'm not quite sure why. I think because they're slow. They only use their hands.
Because they're slow and polite?
And yeah, they're polite, and they look quite nice, I guess, as well. They just don't... I think if it had been me, I'd have been tempted And I think it would have been quite terrifying as a kid if in the area here, one of those robots came back to life, something still, then suddenly starting to walk again. Look at that guy, he's looking at him with his leg up as well. Mate, why did you do that? But this is quite good with the ones coming through, the one trying to come through the back, which we're about to see, I think. Oh, there we go. And there's the very clear reveal that we knew already.
Yeah. But also, I mean, maybe the fact of the early reveal is that we just think, oh, this is a guy who is, he's the bad guy, fine, this is who it is. And we've been talking about, well, this is early, they've done it, given away too soon. But actually what we're finding out as the story progresses, and then we see him at that point, is that he isn't just in charge of the robots, he's actually a lunatic who thinks he is a robot, and this is where we discover how much of a robot he thinks he is, because he's made himself up to look like a robot.
Yeah, I get that, but I just still feel like it was an unnecessary reveal. If you didn't have the shots of his boots, which were distinctive,
yes,
in the engine bay, and you didn't have the shot of him on the screen...
The screen one absolutely kills it, doesn't it? I mean, there's no doubt after that.
You don't gain anything from this approach. You can justify it and sort of go, well, by this point, it doesn't really matter that much. But I just feel watching this the first time, especially as a kid, if you didn't spot that screen, certainly, you might still be wondering where the pool's going to... They've got pool in that space, you know.
Yeah.
Or could it still be a Volnoff? Could it still be Toos? I just don't feel that the script really was asking for that at that point, even though I don't think, as you say, it massively damages the story from the knowing beforehand. Because by this point, you really are probably just thinking it's either Ivanov or Dask. Is it Dask?
Yeah, it's Dask.
It is Dask, yeah.
Brian Crouch's Borg, just to clarify that.
Crouch,
earlier,
yep, Crouch is gone, unless you're thinking there's going to be one of those cheeky reveals that someone who is meant to be dead isn't dead. We are just decoys. I love the way he delivers that line. Yes. Planning to modify them and reactivate them later. They the mind, tomorrow the world. Right now they must be a happy little... Yeah. I mean, look, the inside of that head is fascinating. Yes, well done, D-84. Now you're going to have to stay here. It's such good design. I cannot do that. Not sure about the yellow of the room, but it does mean that everything in it stands out. And to be honest, yellow does hide a lot of the elements. They all fuse together, don't they? Like those pipes on the wall there become part of the wall rather than pipes on the wall.
Yeah.
And it does all feel enclosed. Any ideas? Because you've got those little edges at the top of the doorways. Those are good because they give a sense of a ceiling when there isn't quite one. Here we go. Yeah, this bit I thought was pretty good for a kid. I think this would be kind of freaky. Where you just get a shadow against the door.
Yeah.
That, I think that's pretty cool. Maybe they should have left that longer. The doctor and the girl, Leela, where are they? Their position is... See, that's V5, so where's V3?
He's gone for a walk. He's gone for a photo shoot. It's an illustration. He's gone to pose for an artist.
He's gone to pose. I was thinking that. Yes, fine. And they're good at posing, as we've seen in the previous scenes. That's great, V3, but if you could just be on one leg. Yeah, it's a good effect, that. I bet they're pretty pleased with it as well. I mean, the other beautiful thing about this story, which I hadn't really realised, of course, there's no guns in it at all.
Oh.
So there are no weapons. The only weapons are weapons which people make on either side. The doctor is going to need some help. In fact, there's that, funnily enough, in the very opening scene with the doctor, where Leela leaves her gun behind, is the only gun you see in the entire story that I can think of. And it would have been the only gun in the entire story if she'd brought it along. May have solved this story very quickly. They are unarmed, weak creatures of flesh and blood. See, V5's gone. Which V is there with the... Oh, we know it's not V3 with the hand. He says that, but there's that robot in the robot bay, which he himself earlier points out is irreparable. Well, I suppose a human didn't destroy it. There we come, coming to the final, final scene. Again, it's a beautiful delivery of authorship, isn't it? How you find a way to resolve this, which is very Doctor-esque, very violent but non-violent. Violent ends by non-violent means. Interesting reminder, she comes from the jungle. I like this as well. This notion that they're actually going into a new situation. We're going off robo hunting and the door opens and then that's nixed.
Yeah.
It's an old device, but I think it's always a nice one. Where you're giving a sense of jeopardy and agency to your enemy as well.
Yes.
Just reminds me of Bowie so much, does David Bowie. Lucky no eye for art. Much imagination. Totally off topic, but something I find always blows my mind when watching these sort of, oh, I love that panel.
Is it, yeah.
It's just like that. It's a secret panel. Is it? Why is it just a decadent panel? Who knows? What I love about watching these things is thinking at this moment when this was being filmed and all these people are alive, that who else was alive at this time? You know, like there'd be a tiny baby me somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
There would be a tiny baby you somewhere in the world. There would be a, you know, all those people that you know have gone, all those famous people we know who have gone. People with memories of the First World War would still be around. It's just weird that this is a snapshot, very intimate snapshot of a world which no longer exists.
Yep.
From a production sense. You're going to tell me your plan for running the universe. Young people who are now old. I'm going to burn out your brain. Oh, Bally was doing this, Bowie was doing other stuff. Again, one of these early meta lines that there. Yeah, you know, you're going to be one of these boring people who tells me your plan of the universe. Almost an acknowledgement of format. This is a good line as well, and he plays it so nicely. The whisper. Not half the robot your father was. Simple and effective. Good acting from Baker as always. I mean, this to me is perfect Baker period.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a little bit of silliness to him now, but it's still restrained and doesn't interfere with the story. Yeah. It's a pity that robots so sophisticated as they were, that they just let them have voice recognition as being their only way of identifying. They see that shouldn't have happened. Kill the humans. Kill the humans. Now that shot of the V with the lack of hand blowing up is a weird one, because it looks like it's a doll. Or mannequin, and yet they've still put the false bit of the hand on it. Kill the It's lucky there was one more probe. Otherwise, SV7 could have killed them all, and that could have been the end of the story.
Yeah.
And SV7 would hang out in a landminer. Sandminer. What would he do? Would he mine some sand for fun?
Well, there's not much else he can do.
Well, I suppose he'd rebuild his robots and then go on to take on the world.
Well, all good things come to an end.
It's quite horrid, that, really.
What's Greek, Mars?
Yeah, it's a kind of a... trivialises everything that's just happened. Nice bit of audio scale on the approach to the TARDIS, I recall.
I've been around, you know. Two hearts, a spirited bypass system. I haven't lived 750 years without learning something after you.
Yeah. Was that... Do you think they artificially audio-pitched her voice then? Or do you think that was... Did they just get her to breathe in a load of helium and...
I don't think there's any helium being used. The doctor returns. I think in terms of Dask, Taran, Capel, I think that was definitely electronic. So
that was a very slow transition between the end shot and the credits.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So the robots of death. This is the first of these commentaries we've done in ages. I've really enjoyed this, so I think we should do some more of these more regularly, yes. James.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, we've picked a peak one there.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yeah, we should definitely aim for something less well-tread. I'm not saying Underworld should be it, but something like Underworld.
Yeah, something like... It's a hard one, isn't it? I suppose it depends on where you want to go. Do you want to end up talking in sort of high concepts, or do you want to stay focused to the story? This allows you to stay focused on the story because there's so much to talk about. Underworld, probably less so. But, yeah, we should find some more. I mean, if anyone has suggestions, then we can always go with suggestions. I imagine there's a lot of the early Baker stuff, which people would like, which I know we've not done. I mean... The obvious one that springs to mind, the two that I don't think we did. Did we ever do Ark in Space?
I don't think we did, no. I mean, looking at that entire story, that set of stories as a whole, I'm Revenge of the Cybermen is one that I have an interesting relationship with, so that might be one to go back to.
Well, yeah, it's one that I remember as a kid as well, so... It was one of the... Well, it was the first, as I recall.
It's one of the first ones that I read.
I was thinking in terms of VHS.
Oh, right, no.
Betamax.
No, it's one of the first ones I read. So, library book.
Oh, interesting. No, it's not one of the first ones I read, but obviously, as I say, it was one of the first ones to be released on purchasable or certainly rental.
Yeah, VHS.
Maybe if people don't mind us choosing, maybe we do Revenge of the Cybermen next.
Maybe, yeah.
I do like it. I love its soundtrack. And there's a lot to like in that, and I know it's disliked quite a lot. But I think that might be quite an interesting one to review again.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let us know what you think. If you do have any suggestions, there may be ones that we can move on to later on. And also, let us know what you think about The Robots of Death. We'll be back for a new episode soon and a new commentary soon, by the looks of things. Until then, it's goodbye from us.